I thought about doing it next week, and I'm like, no, I want to just finish this up so that we can kind of start focusing on some more seasonal stuff. Like the biblical basis for Rudolph, or I don't know. The Greek word for Rudolph is Rudolph. Oh, mail. Yeah, now it's spam. We call spam now. Mail is like links of chain put together. Yeah, so armor would be solid, where mail would be links of chain hooked together, so then it still protects you, but it's a little more flexible. Yeah, that's the difference. So it's a... Right. Yeah, whatever, if you had enough momentum to go through. I can't imagine wearing 175 pounds of armor. Yeah, the guys, I don't know what looks like Kevlar vests. Yeah, it's over 100 pounds. Yeah, this would be just the armor, because he had it on his arms, his legs, you know, everything there, plus his weapons and all of that kind of stuff. Right? Well, and I remember, like, the Rangers would carry, like, 70 pounds routinely or whatever, but you carry, especially if you're mobile, and there's, you have to carry everything you need. My first sergeant my unit in Georgia, he was in the Vietnam War, and they had to carry along with their own stuff, they had to carry an M50, it's a 50 caliber machine gun. And the barrel itself, I remember, because we had one on our armored personnel carrier, but the barrel itself was 30 pounds, and you had to carry two barrels, because one would get hot. And then the chamber itself had to be like 60 or 80 pounds, and the barrel screwed into it. And the tripod was 50. And when you're walking through, he said, they would just, the men would complain like crazy about having, and then you had to carry all the ammunition. That's in addition to your food and your own weapons and all this kind of stuff. And the 50 caliber round is this big, as casing at home, you know, it's big and it's just super heavy. It said, until the first firefight, and they realized how important the 50 caliber machine gun was in combat, all of a sudden they were volunteering to carry weapons, you know, this stuff, because the 50 caliber effective range is unlimited. Yes. Yeah, anything automatic, rifle or anything would help, so. So yeah, so there's always more to carry besides your own stuff too. Like if you're a mortar platoon or something, you're carrying all your ammunition. You have to spread it around. And they get that. Maybe you feel like attacking. Yeah, and this was just his armor. 175 pounds. Did I walk? Yeah, the word sprint was probably a broad use, not a specific. Yeah. Okay, I'm in 1 Samuel 17. I'm going to read the last several verses, starting with verse 51. Part of it we've looked at. And I'll read to the end. Just four points to highlight what God did. The title looks like he left the word in. Therefore, David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword and drew up it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron. They basically chased them home. Okay, Ekron is a Philistine. And the wounded of the Philistines fell along the road to Shaarim, even as far as Gath and Ekron. Gath again is Goliath of Gath. That was his hometown. It was a Philistine city in southwest Israel. If it was still there. The children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their tents. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, and he put his armor in his tent. And Saul saw David going out against the Philistine and said that when Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is this?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." So the king said, "Inquire whose son this young man is." Then as David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, "Whose son are you, young man?" So David answered, "I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehem." All right, it's interesting that... We'll just go here. What great things can a big God accomplish to small people? You might cross off the second can in the title of the video, but mine has this. What great things can a big God accomplish to small people? Four results. There's more than four. These are just four in the text, okay? Number one... I'm going to put them over here. God multiplies effort. Okay? God takes what we do and accomplishes much more with it than it can be accomplished. Can you give me an example of that in the New Testament? A lot of hungry people. Yeah, five loaves and two fishes. Doesn't that make sense? That's God. He doesn't feed them out of nothing. He says, "Give me something, and then I'll feed 5,000 men plus women and children." And a conservative estimate is 12,000 people were fed with five loaves and two fishes, and they collected 12 huge baskets of food. I mean, there was more food collected afterwards than what God started with. Okay, that's God. Alright? Or it's like, even it's a little different, but John 21. "Children, have you caught anything?" He's talking to Peter and his buddies in the fishing boat. You know, Peter kind of quit and went back fishing. "No, nothing. You fished all night and got nothing." "Well, throw your net on the other side." That's stupid. You know, what the fish are not on this side, so they're on the other side of the boat. Throws the net in. He doesn't have the fish jump in the boat. He makes them throw the net out. When they pull it, they can't pull the net in. 153 fish on the other side of the boat. Okay? Ta-da! That's God. God multiplies effort. But he allows us to expend the effort. If we are unwilling to expend the effort, God will not show himself powerful. Okay? It's a belief in God there. David killed, listen, it's in your notes too, but David killed one man and the entire Philistine army. That's a pretty good shot. My grandpa, he was dying of pancreatic cancer. So I went up this year, and he said, "Did I ever tell you about the time I got 12 peasants with one shot?" No. My grandpa was kind of a jokester, so I didn't know if there was a punchline or what. And he says, "I went out, it was winter time, and I went out and there's these peasants all over, and I shot and I missed. And then I realized they didn't fly away, their eyes were froze shut, so I went around and beat them over the head and got 12. I mean, this really happened. You know, that's more at a human level, but that's kind of, you know, he even missed. And then he comes up with 12 peasants to help feed his family, you know. But I mean, God did that in a supernatural way. David kills one man with one stone, and the entire enemy army runs away. That's how God works. That's how God works. Did David chase the army away? No. What did David do? David was willing to use what God had patiently prepared him to do. Not the armor, not the sword, not the spear, just the sling. And David went to battle, no armor, kills Goliath, chops his head off, and at that point they're like, "He's really dead," and they run away. That kid's pretty amazing, isn't he? Isn't it amazing what God can do with one person? And that's what I want you to really grab onto today. What can God do with me if I just patiently prepare, faithfully follow, and eagerly engage where God puts me? That's it. He might not bring you face-to-face with a 9-foot giant. He just wants you to accomplish what he puts in front of you, and he wants you to be faithful and confident what he can do with you. Be prepared to be amazed at what God does to supernaturally enhance the impact of your testimony. I told the story. It doesn't really relate, but it really impacted my heart when I first saw it. But my son Nathan, some of you heard this before. We were in Washington, Iowa, and Nathan he did his school done, but he just wasn't busy. So James sent him down in my little workroom to build something. Figured if he was pounding nails or something, that would help, because otherwise he'd get in trouble teasing two older sisters, four younger sisters, burning the house down, whatever is available. But I remember I got home from work, and James said, "Yeah, Nate's downstairs. He's got something to show you." And I went downstairs, and here's this 2x4 creation. It was about this long, 2x4, and then there was like this 2x6 nailed at the end. And there was, I can't remember if it was in the top or the bottom, another monstrously thick board nailed tight. Those are the wings, right? And the other was there. And he was just, it was heavy. "Dad, look. Look at my hair." And I commended him. You know, it's pretty good for Nate, you know. But it just shocked me in a sense. And I never said anything to Nate because it wasn't directly related to him, but I said that in my mind, I'm like, that's exactly what we offer. It's not like there was nothing aerodynamic about that plane. It would be nothing but sheer force that would get it in the air or keep it going in the air. And I don't think he ever tried to fly it. It's not wild. Maybe he aimed it off the roof. But I mean, I saw that as just an illustration. That's exact. Our best efforts are this 2x4 with the 2x6 as a tail and a big monstrous something across the top. And then that's all God's asking. He wants you to try. He wants you to faithfully do the best you can
with what He gives you. And then God takes that and He defeats an army with it. That's exactly what I see here. You do what you can, and then He accomplishes great things with it. Is it what you built that accomplishes great things? No. God just says, hey, let's fly this puppy. Let's see what we can do with this airplane. It's like, it's not your airplane. It's the impact that God can use through what you're willing to do that God makes the difference in. It's not your ability. Even though you should patiently pray, prepare, and faithfully follow, and eagerly engage, it's God that wins, and that's why you can be confident. Okay? That's the difference. God supernaturally enhances the impact of your efforts as you do those things. Patiently prepare, faithfully follow, and eagerly engage. That's what God uses. He will not use somebody who is unwilling to be faithful where they're at, wherever they're at, with whatever they can find. God will use what you do, but He will not use what you can do, but don't. Got it? That's God. Why? I don't know. He can easily get by without us, right? He doesn't need a Kevin to speak. He doesn't need a Lynn to wire speakers. But He does. He doesn't need parents to raise children. But He does. He uses us anyway. In all of those things, God multiplies efforts. Number two, what does God do with someone small that is willing to patiently prepare, faithfully follow, and eagerly engage? I forgot it. When you get older, if you walk more than 6 feet, it works as an eraser for your mind. You'll get that when you get older. God encourages others by what you do. God encourages others. Here's David. His brother just verbally beat him up. David, all he said is, isn't there a fight? Here, Eliab, isn't there a cause? Let me read this again. Now the men of Israel and Judah arose and shouted. What happened? Number one, God multiplies the effort. The army of the Philistines runs away. One kid killed one guy, and the entire army flees. They don't run out in the battle to beat up the kid to kill their champion. They run away. It's like, if the kid's that strong, what's the army like? Now the men of Israel and Judah rose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and the gates of Ekron. I'll jump down. Then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their tents. God used David's willingness and obedience to do what he could with what he had. And I might add, where he was, wherever he was, he was just faithful to be willing to do whatever needed to be done, wherever he was at, with whatever he had. And the entire army of Israel was encouraged to fight. Here's a kid who was willing to fight, and instead of sitting there harping it to the king about what he's not doing, harping to the army about their inactivity, he goes out there, does something, and the rest go, yeah, let's do it too. The entire army enjoyed the results of battle. Know that others will be encouraged to stand and fight for God because you do. One, I don't know who said this. It's not original to me, but there are people waiting on the other side of your obedience. They're waiting for you to stand up and do what you know you need to do because they will be encouraged. Who here needs to be a David so that other people will be encouraged to stand up and do what needs to be done? That's a question that's fair to ask. God encourages others through what willing people are willing to do. The next one here, number three. What's the middle word? God, I've changed these enough too. God gives, and this is the word trophies. God gives trophies. Now what do I mean by that? Yeah, awards, but not in the same way. What's a trophy? Is a trophy worth anything usually in and of itself? Not always. Not usually even. Like, what did they used to give in the old days for the Olympics? It was a wreath. It was like a, was it an olive? It was some kind of plant, a wreath, though. What happens to a wreath? Yeah, it shrivels and dies. I mean, it's worth nothing in and of itself. But it's what it represents. That's what a trophy is. A lot of trophies today, if you win a basketball tournament or whatever, or a bowling tournament, you get this trophy. And what's it made out of? Solid gold plastic, right? It's usually cheap stuff. Now, maybe the fancy stuff for the Olympics today, they cast some gold. There's some parameters that they have to do it for. But honestly, the Olympians do it for the honor or the endorsements more than they do for that gold medal. The medal in it and the gold medal isn't that much to spend all your life doing. There's other things that are related. So it's still a trophy in a sense. David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put the armor in his tent. Now, I put down here, God provided lasting trophies for three reasons. And he does this to encourage, to remind, and to build upon. Okay? And I put down here just two trophy impacts. Impacts of these trophies here. The head of Goliath encouraged the entire nation that God was God and that he should be obeyed and could be trusted to defeat the enemies of Israel. Remember, David cut off his head. There's a reason for that. It was a trophy of sorts. It's a proof that here our enemy is dead. They couldn't watch Fox News or CNN to see this happen. Here's living proof that God wins when you obey God. God would fight for them if they would trust and obey Him. That was the trophy of Goliath's head. Okay, it was evidence of God's strength if the Israelites are willing to follow Him. So that encouraged the people to follow God, to remind people that God could win any enemy, and to build upon that victory. The armor of Goliath, where did David put that? In his tent. Why? The Bible doesn't say. I'm answering my own question here, but the Bible doesn't say. Why would you put armor in your tent? Now, don't think of a pup tent. They lived in tents, right? Yeah, I don't know what it was made out of. The helmet was, it says bronze, but there wasn't bronze yet. It was probably copper, so it would tarnish or whatever. But why did he keep it? Maybe it's the answer I'm looking for. Yeah, that's a guess on my part, but I think that's a good guess. You put that, it's just like he said, there's a lion I killed, a bear that I killed. This is what God can do. And again, David knew he was anointed the king. There would be a lot of times that he would need to be reminded. Remember when Saul chased him around for years and years? David didn't know what was coming, but he could look back and say, God is going to win this battle. The armor of Goliath was a trophy to encourage David of what great things God could do through him as a young man that no one gave serious thought about. It was an encouragement to David as an individual. The head of Goliath was an encouragement to the entire nation and the army of Israel. The armor was kind of like a trophy of David, you know, to look back on and say, look, this is what God will do. And David gave God the honor for it. He didn't take credit. Everyone heard what David said. God will deliver you into my hand. So God gives trophies for that reason. There's other things that God prevents. What happened to the... Remember the bronze serpent? Remember in the Old Testament? God allowed these serpents to grow on and bite people because they were refusing to believe God. And so he commanded Moses to create a bronze serpent which everyone had to look up. Jesus referred to it in John 3. As Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, they had to look up. If they looked up, they would live, survive the bite of the snake, otherwise, the serpent. Otherwise, they would die. Okay? What did they end up doing with that? It became an idol to them, and they worshipped it. Now, that's not the point of that. Okay? It's not intended to be worshipped in and of itself. It's intended to remind us of the strength and power of God. And for the serpent, the deliverance of God. So God gives trophies to encourage people of what He has done and what He can do, to remind people of what He has done and what He can do, and to build upon it so that people will be willing to go out and do more because of what God can do and what God is willing to work and do through people, small people. Number four, God rewards, and I put this warriors. I put it in quotations because I don't mean someone that goes out and fights a physical battle necessarily, okay? God rewards warriors. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of the army, whose son is this youth? Did Saul know who he was? He knew who the boy was. He didn't really know much about the family. That's what he kept asking, whose son is he? Where did he come from? He knew David. David played the harp for him, but he didn't really know much about what kind of man raises a kid like this to do what he just is doing right now. Abner said, as your soul is, I don't know. The king said, inquire whose son this young man is. And then David returned from the slaughter of the Philistine. Abner took him and brought him before Saul with the head of the Philistine in his hand. And Saul said to him, whose son are you, young man? So David answered, I am the son of your servant Jesse the Bethlehemite. By the way, what would be done for the man who killed this? Marry my daughter. Promote him. I can't remember the exact promotion. And I kind of think, yes, the taxes. That's why I think David might have been motivated as well for his family. I don't know that, you know, he might be seeing the, well, if God wants you to marry Saul's daughter, so be it or not. Because, you know, David doesn't seem to be one ever throughout his life that was pursuing David, except for the Bathsheba incident. But he was... Look, what happened for his family? It sounds like even Eliab would have been tax-free after this, if you follow him. The household of his father would be tax-free. And I think maybe that's part of it. Saul is wanting to know whose son is this because of a profound respect that was being developed for David's father at this very moment. What kind of man raises a young man like this? But also, David's father's family are the ones that would receive the tax benefit, never having to pay taxes again. So it doesn't go into great detail as to why, but David asked several times, what will happen if this is it? And at least part of it was a benefit for David's entire family, not just himself. How many taxes was David paying at that point? Probably not a whole lot. It probably went to his father's family at that point. Samuel. Samuel anointed David. Saul was trying to prevent anything like that from happening. Yeah, I don't know that he knew that David was anointed to be king of Israel, but he knew that they had selected David to play the harp in Saul's court when Saul was had this evil spirit on him. And so Saul knew that much, but it's like if, you know, how many people in the White House does the president know? You know, how many people remember the people that you come across every day? You know, it's like, I know your name, don't tell me. Okay, tell me. You know, I don't remember you. Warriors. What do I mean by warriors? Those willing to stand for God with what they have in spite of the circumstances or opinions of others. That's all I mean by warriors. I'm talking men, women, and children to be warriors by my definition. They're willing to live for God and stand for God where they're at. God will reward as He sees fit in this life and the life to come. God promotes, and the dash there is there on purpose, faithfulness. God promotes people that live by faith, that walk by faith, that believe God. They're willing and persistent. He rewards willing, persistent obedience. It isn't the result. God is responsible for the result, but it's the obedience in the midst of that that God rewards. You do not need to pursue promotion. Just be faithful where you are at, doing what you should do. David never pursued promotion. We've said that before. God will bring you to the attention of those that He wants you to know and possibly serve under. I put Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Hebrews 11, there's a whole list of people that obeyed God. You can read that later. Or Revelation 2 and 3, God says, if you are faithful, I will give you this, over and over, the seven churches of Asia Minor. So there's many more, but these stand out in this passage. God, what is God, what great things can a big God accomplish through small people? David was not big. What made David big is the big God he represented. God multiplies effort. God encourages others. God gives trophies, and God rewards warriors. That's what God will do if we are willing to patiently prepare, faithfully follow, and eagerly engage the enemy. Let's pray, and then we'll sing our closing hymn, "A Little Town of Bethlehem." Okay? We actually are quitting early, yeah. Lord, thank You for Your Word. And again, we thank You for David. And we understand that David was just a man after Your own heart because he saw You. He just trusted in You. And he saw what the issues were. And help us to be like David. Help us to be willing to stand and do what You want with what You've given us. Help us to patiently prepare. Just to be faithful in making all that we can do with what You've given us right here now, because You're preparing us. And help us to faithfully follow, Lord, even when others do not. Help us to faithfully follow. When the world says no, when the church says no, when the family says no, whatever the case might be, help us to trust what You say rather than what people see. And help us not to follow the crowd for the crowd's sake. Lord, help us to eagerly engage. Help us to just offer ourselves as the solution and see what You can do with the little bit we can offer, and You can accomplish great things and encourage people on the other side of our being. We pray this in Jesus' name.